Have you been injured at work and need help getting the benefits you deserve? Call me, attorney Steve Marte, at 312-312-HURT for a free consultation. That's 312-312-HURT. I will personally handle your claim from start to finish. Call me, Steve Marte, today.
That's right. We're having a blast with Miller Time. You've made it to your weekend.
Yeah.
Ice cold Miller Lights flowing right here. Fire bar and grill. Plenty of room still for you if you want to sit outside as well.
Got a bucket of Miller Lite in front of me.
I know.
A couple of soldiers down, though.
They,
but may have to ask for
reinforcements. On the way.
Yeah.
They're on the way.
Yeah.
I love it. We're having a blast. We got a great crowd here. And come on by. We've got Miller Lite swag. We've got a White Sox tickets to give away here as well.
Against the Tigers. Which means you're probably going to go, right? No? Or is it not the Tigers? I thought it was the Tigers.
For free ticket Friday, it's the Tigers. What do we have here today?
Do we have other tickets to give away?
I'll ask Travis, unless he's too busy
trying
out my sunglasses.
Yeah, he's schmoozing.
He'll tell us later which tickets we have them for. But come on by, and we got the marketing department out here. Tyler Aki's here with us
as well. Yeah.
A couple of people came up. One Sox fan was very excited because I go, hey, did you meet Tyler?
Yes.
And then when he found out, he's like, oh, Tyler Aki.
Yeah.
And he was very excited to meet Tyler. And then there was another guy who shook hands with you, shook hands with me, and turned to Tyler, and he says, are you anyone?
How did you respond, Tyler?
I said, the answer's no. Yeah. The answer's no.
There you are, yeah. I said, of course he's someone. We're all someone.
And as a matter of fact, get a look at him now because he's not going to be with us very long.
Yeah.
We're not pushing him out the door. He's just a rising star in our industry.
But
so
then
we appreciate him while we have him.
Yeah, all of our people that you know or don't know are someone. Everyone's someone.
Of course.
But Tyler does a great job for us, and he's out with us as well.
He could probably give us the best breakdown of who the Bulls added last night with the 18th pick of the draft.
The funny part was, Tyler, is Waddle was texting us this morning. He's like, you know what I could use? I could use. And I put that, I could picture your voice. You know what I could use? I could use a Tyler Aki breakdown of a Dalen Terry.
Yeah.
Who's Dalen Terry? And I'm thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, Tyler did tweet a whole scouting report.
Yes,
I think I texted in the group chain too last night too.
And I retweeted it and it's out there, but. Well, Waddle wanted that one-on-one.
Yes.
Text scouting report.
Yeah, don't want to have to read it. I want you to tell it. Break it down for me in elementary terms.
So who is Dalen Terry?
All right, he is a very versatile wing who has point guard capability. 6'7", but he's got a really good handle on the basketball, very good passer as well. And, yeah, he's got an over 7-foot wingspan as well. He's got the length, Waddle. You love the length, right?
You have to. If you're in the NBA, you got to have length.
Yep. And then another thing that's interesting with him is he's a guy who just fits into his role really well. And I think it's very similar to what Patrick Williams was when he came out of the draft at Florida State. These are two guys who were not primary guys, but they were on one-seed teams, or in Patrick Williams' case, a team that would have been a one-seed if the tournament was not axed that year. But similarly to Patrick Williams, one thing that the Arizona coaching staff had to tell him a lot was be more aggressive. And
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds like Patrick Williams. It
is almost a spot-on comparison with Patrick Williams. Now, I think
he was, what, an 8-point per game scorer?
8-point per game.
Arizona.
I think he had like 4 or 5 rebounds per game. But he was all Pac-12 defensive team. He's a really strong defender, really good at getting out in transition. And one thing with him is he had an improved jump shot towards the end of the season. During the Pac-12 and the NCAA tournaments, which I think Arizona played 6 or 7 games over that span, shot 60% from three.
Okay.
So he's working on that shot. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. 93% of his threes were assisted on last year. So
I think I saw the one game I saw him play was, again, did they play Memphis in the tournament?
No.
They didn't? Arizona didn't?
Gonzaga played Memphis. That was the 1-9.
Okay.
But they played, I forget who they played in the first round in the 1-16, but then they played against, who is it? It was TCU in that second round. That was
a really
physical game. That was one of Terry's best games. He was a big reason why they ended up winning that game, actually.
You could use that. Like when a guy's a big factor in a postseason game, win because of a guy. I think like we've seen this track record, and again, like AK's aggression in making trades, it's a limited sample size. Like, how many guys has he drafted since he's been here? 3? Has it been more than 3?
I think it's 3 plus Simonovic.
Simonovic, who they stashed, and he was in the G League and spent some time on the bench last year as well. But to me, it seems like all three of those guys, Io, Patrick Williams, and Dalen Terry, are really good defensive players.
Right.
They're not going to be guys who are not going to put up a fight defensively. They're right. all hard workers who have really good measurables, too. Now, Io had that college production. Io had a really accomplished college career and just fell so low, and really good defensively, could play a couple different positions. But like you said, Dalen Terry and Patrick Williams, I think Patrick Williams averaged 9 points a game, came off the bench for Arizona. But what they care about, big, strong athletes who can be developed. Do they believe in their development process of giving a player who might not be a finished product in college and developing him to become that player?
Well, wasn't Jimmy Butler kind of a similar type of draft pick?
I think the thing that I'm noticing with this regime and the way that they have drafted so far is they say, all right, you can do everything else well, but you're not a great shooter right now. But we'll worry about that later, because that is the easiest thing for these NBA coaching staffs to teach. You get in the gym, it's muscle memory, you go out there. You can't teach the ability to find the open man. You can't teach a 7-foot wingspan. But we can get you in a gym, and we can get you shooting some three-pointers all summer long, and we think that you can develop
that. Lonzo Ball is a good example of that. Yeah. When Lonzo got into the league, he wasn't a very good shooter.
There are so many. It used to be, if you didn't have that skill set coming out of college, people would pigeonhole you and say, you don't have that ability to shoot or to create. And like, I think Jalen Brunson's a really good example of that, too. Wasn't he even a second-round pick?
He was, yeah.
So Jalen Brunson was a guy who was never thought of to be an impact guy, but now all of a sudden his game has totally developed. You mentioned Jimmy Butler, a guy who just gets in that gym. These guys who have good work ethics, there's no ceiling anymore on where they can go. And I'm not telling you that Dalen Terry or even Patrick Williams are going to be stars, but to just say, well, he's an 8 point per game guy or he's a 9 point per game guy doesn't mean anything when they're only 19 years old and they have a chance to be developed by a whole organization.
The one thing I would say, and I mean, look, this is without any real, evidence to have this feeling, but when you draft someone at 4 versus 18,
right.
Like when I look at Patrick Williams, I have higher expectations for his offensive proclivity early. Like I need year three, I need to see him be more proactive and not defer as much. He needs to have a greater impact on what they do offensively because of where he was drafted. Maybe that's not necessarily the case, but like I would cut this guy a little bit more slack in terms of his offensive contributions. Patrick Williams needs to contribute quite a bit offensively going forward, starting this season.
Yeah, I would look at, I mean, the ceiling that people place on Patrick Williams all the time is Kawhi, right? I would say a reasonable ceiling to put on a guy like Dalen Terry would be someone like a Trevor Ariza, guy who played a long time in the league, really good defensively.
That's an all Waddle.
He's an all Waddle.
That is, yeah. And a guy who developed that 3-point shot as time went on. So that to me is, and that's what you get. That's the difference between drafting a guy 4th overall and drafting a guy 18th overall.
When you draft a guy 18th overall, I mean, like your hope is he becomes. Like Jimmy was drafted much later, but you, I mean, ultimately your hope is you have found that diamond in the rough, and after polishing it enough, and that kid working as hard as he can, he becomes a player like Jimmy. That's the exception to the rule. But when you're drafting a kid at 18, what you just described, if you can get that out of him, like that's a successful draft, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, you have to have reasonable expectations for someone you're drafting with the 18th pick.
I think you look at it with – I like to use the Phoenix Suns as a good comp. Like, can you find players that the Suns have in role players? I think the Suns have great role
like
players.
Like Bridges.
Like Cam Johnson.
Yeah.
If you can find guys like that who can play both ends of the floor, can give you some shooting, that's what you need. And that's – to me, I look at Dalen Terry and I said, that's a guy who would be like one of those Suns role players.
Carmen, I heard, use the comp of the Celtics, too. Like, the Bulls and Celtics could be viewed as being built similarly. You've got two guys, Carmen pointed out, too, that their two guys who are their stars in Jaylen Brown and Tatum are guys who will play defense and are really good defensively. It's a big problem with the Bulls is where LaVine and DeMar don't play
even
defense.
With Vooch at times as well.
Right. But then... So those are your primary scorers, and then it's sort of with Marcus Smart and a bunch of guys who can come off the bench and do some damage. But again, you know, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, and they've got all offseason for me, and I didn't know much about Dalen Terry. I read a lot. I watched a lot. I listened to Tyler. I saw Kevin it's Kevin O'Connor,
Kevin
right?
Kevin O'Connor, yeah.
Kevin O'Connor, I don't know if you can pull up these. Do you have the synopsis handy?
I can pull it up, yeah.
He gave them an A-.
A lot of people gave him A's and A-minuses for the pick.
He said that he loves him. Mm-hmm. And again, like...
Well, he was a guy also that was mentioned as someone who was rising after, you know, the workouts. So.
That was the talk, that his stock in a lot of these mock drafts, that he was pushing his way up the draft board.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, but now it's about, to me, going out and not banking on Vooch's shot being better.
Did you find yourself a little bit disappointed that they didn't do something other than use the 18th pick on Terry?
I could get his, like, someone called me a meatball yesterday.
A meatball. I like that. That's excellent.
Instead of a meatball, a meatball.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, you, with this team more than any, I can get into that. I was calling them a contender for the first half of the season the way they were playing. I like action. I like to get excited.
Yeah.
But I was telling myself, it doesn't matter about winning draft night if he turns into a really good contributing player. Now it's like the work gets done with the sign and trades. Where's Ayton going to go? Is Ayton a possibility? Is it like why are people all of a sudden closing the door on Gobert? Because you don't have the 18th pick to trade anymore?
I guess.
Well, I think the other thing with this 18th pick is what's the buzzword we've heard with Utah is they've been coveting this defensive 3-and-D wing, right? Well, that's exactly what Dalen Terry is. Utah may like him.
Right.
And that may essentially be the 18th pick. Yeah.
Are you allowed to trade them in their first year, though? Because I know...
Yeah, because that's what happened with Andrew Wiggins.
Okay.
In the Kevin Love trade.
There was a lot of talk as well, wasn't
was he
there?
He was a rookie.
He was a rookie, and he never played for the Cavs. Okay. Yep.
Wasn't there some chatter as well that the Bulls were actively looking to move up or down? Like, they were willing to move from 18?
And it sounded
and
like
set on it.
They got a lot of calls. That's what Eversley was saying after the draft, was there was a lot of activity and a lot of people were interested in the pick, because I think the way that the board sort of fell in that instance was there were a lot of players that were still intriguing, especially from the wing standpoint. Guy like Dalen Terry, another guy, Malachi Branham, who ended up going two picks later. There were a lot of intriguing prospects still on the board when the Bulls were on the clock.
Right. Didn't Eversley also talk about Lonzo and where he's at with his knee?
He said the question was about his health and the health of his knee. And if he'd be ready by training camp, and Eversley put it, I would hope so.
Right, so would we all.
But it wasn't like, what we didn't hear was, boy, Lonzo has really now, we know what's wrong with him.
Right.
And now it's feeling better. We're finally progressing with his rehab, and he'll be as good as new. And you know what I mean?
A huge question mark still.
There was none of that. There was, he's progressing. He's working with his guys. And we would hope he'd be ready training camp.
Well, there was hope that he would have been ready for the final month of the regular season.
That's a good point.
You know, so that's still something to me. And I when Caruso was down, obviously he's an important component to what you're trying to do. But the loss of Ball and what he added to that team, especially when you've got some guys that aren't defensively, you know, accomplished defensively in Zach and DeMar, like, you can't really afford not to have Ball on the floor. And then the pace of the game slows down because he's not there. I think he is an enormous component to whether or not they're going to be able to take a big step next year.
I had two friends, Tyler, text me saying, why did the Bulls just draft another Io? Is it and could they be wanting to include Io in some sort of a trade, too, this offseason, where he's proven that he could be a capable NBA player at the very least?
I wouldn't
say... And
then
have his replacement in Dalen Terry?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's an Io. I think Io, especially what we saw, too, towards the end of the season, was we saw Io more out of the two spot. And I think Terry is more of a one or a three. And he's a good facilitator, especially for his size. And he's a guy that you can run your offense through. Like, a lot of people were talking about why they wouldn't want to bring Gobert in is because Vooch is a guy that you could run your offense through, and you're losing a guy like that. Well, Terry's a guy, he's a really good passer from all three levels, And he is a guy that you could sort of run your offense through out of the wing spots because he's a pass-first three, a pass-first wing. But I also think, too, that if you're looking at pieces and assets that the Bulls have, Io's one that I feel like isn't talked about enough. I think Io's a guy that teams would certainly be intrigued with. He's an all-rookie team member from a season ago on the second team. Like, there are assets on the Bulls, and I think Io would be one of them that you'd think a team like Utah would be intrigued by, especially if they're thinking about getting rid of Gobert. You want to bring some sort of defense back.
When does the free agency period begin?
I believe it's June 30th.
So we're close. Like,
oh,
it's going to heat
up.
It's
here in the next week or two. Things heat up. Like, they've got the – isn't June 30th, isn't that the deadline, or June 29th for when – what was it about with the Bulls where they have the exclusive rights with
– with LaVine,
And you wonder, will he – like, does – all reports now seem – but, again, nobody that I've – totally trust has reported that he's coming back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I've heard it from outs, like,
on the outskirts. Reported by several that, the Bulls have informed other teams that they're going to sign him to the max.
But from who?
Right.
The one that caught me was Mark Stein. When Mark Stein said, the word around the league is, don't even bother because Zach LaVine's going to sign that first day.
Okay, then because we all had always heard that Zach had never been a free agent, and what he wanted was to be wined and
dined. Wanted a little bit of love. Don't we all want a little bit of love?
Unless there was some doubt that the Bulls were going to give him the max, and that was all sort of a ruse to get the Bulls to $211 million.
I thought that the Bulls made it clear to him last year that they were willing to give him, that they were going to give him the max. Just be patient. You know, you're the focal point of what we're trying to do. That was always the impression I got from the organization.
Here's the Kevin O'Connor on the Ringer, the draft grade. He gives the Bulls an A-, I believe it was. A-, yes. And how about these first two sentences? I love Dalen Terry. I love him so much. It is like, that's like Mason.
Sounds like somebody
that is like Mason, Mason writing the draft synopsis.
I love ice cream. I love ice cream so much.
Yes, exactly. So he says, I love Dalen Terry. I love him so much, just like Arizona fans do. And I bet Bulls fans will love him too, just as they love Alex Caruso and Lonzo Ball, because Terry is a hustler. That dude grinds on defense and on offense. He's so selfless. There isn't a moment on the court that you feel he's doing anything but trying to win. I mean, those are great qualities.
They are. The only thing I would ask, and I'm not trying to be a cynic or anything, is why did he last to 18?
I think part of it was because of the team he was on.
Okay.
He wasn't allowed – like, he had one of his teammates, Ben Mathurin, he went, I believe it was 6, to the Pacers. He was the star of that team. He was the guy who sucked away all the offensive attention. There were a couple other shooters on that team, Kirk Kreisa. He's a big-time shooter that you had to close out on as well. So – Terry played his role really well, and if he went back to college, this was one of the things that he talked about too in his post-draft presser was, I could have gone back to college to be a star, but I haven't been working on this since I was 2 years old to be a college basketball player. He wanted to get to the league, and I think that's part of, it's one of those things, like, there's so many good basketball players these days, whether it's AAU, like, even the guy the Bulls got as an undrafted free agent. That was a guy who was probably going to go in the early stages of the second round, Justin Lewis. A lot of people like him, too, and people think that he may have been the best undrafted free agent in this class as well. So there's just so much talent, but he didn't have a chance to really showcase that talent because there were other stars on that one-seed Arizona.
I have another question for you real quick.
Really quick, can I address what you said, though? Like, we read early in the week all the guys who have been drafted at 18.
Oh, yeah.
I think Mike McGraw had it. In the last 5 years, all the good players who have been drafted at 18 or below, and this is recent times, like with all the –
Maxey's on that list,
right?
Tyrese Maxey.
18 isn't – I know it's not lottery, but 18 isn't 42, and the current MVP was drafted in the second round. That was different. He was a European player.
The interesting thing, too, is to look at is, like, we've got our eyes fixed on whether it's the Heat or the Celtics or the Bucks or the Sixers. But there are some other teams that are climbing the ranks as well, aren't they, in the East, that are going to be more of a handful? And aren't the Detroit Pistons one of those teams? Like, who else is climbing the ladder in the East that, you know – we as Bulls fans just look at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah.
But the Bulls, until they do something even more significant, they're going to be grinding with some of these other teams that are kind of comparable to them.
Well, look what happens when you stay stagnant, right? Look at the Knicks.
Yes.
The Knicks were one of those teams everyone thought was climbing the ladder. And then this season, they don't make the playoffs.
Didn't the Bulls and Knicks have similar situations where they were both surprise teams?
Yeah.
They were both about mid, like I think the Knicks were a 4 seed and the Bulls were what? Ended up being a 6 seed. And then they both won one playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it. And then, I believe the Bulls are more talented than what the Knicks have on their roster, but that's why I don't believe in this, and I sure hope AK doesn't believe in it, let's try it again thing. This isn't a team with Giannis saying, we lost in the second round, let's try it again, because we had bad breaks and our second best player was hurt. If you have that superstar, you understand, let's try it again and tweak some stuff, but the Bulls don't have it, so they have to be extra good around the perimeter there. And where's their shooting coming from?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. It's not on their roster just yet.
No.
Again, you'll get ball back if you do get ball back. But outside of that, you're going to have to, you're going to have to find somebody. So, incomplete product for sure.
I think the other thing too, the other team that a lot of people think of with as risers is Atlanta was one that was working its way up, and then Cleveland as well, And people have been dancing around Washington too, but if they don't bring back Bradley Beal, and the point is, Tyler,
currently you put the Bulls in the category with the Raptors and the Hawks and the Cavs, and even like maybe the Pistons are trying to get there. You don't put them in the same category with the Heat, the Celtics, the Bucks, and the 76ers.
They're
second tier Eastern Conference team at the moment.
So why is that good enough?
That's why
they cannot stand pat
and
just say run it back and hope we're healthier or that Vooch shoots it better. That's not a game plan. That's a terrible game plan. But again, I don't know that that is their game plan.
Right.
I am going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Because so far he's been super aggressive, and the offseason really hasn't even started.
Right.
So that's why I'm interested to hear what Goff has.
Well, we had a couple of people came up to us here at the last break and said, are you upset the Bulls didn't do anything last night?
Yeah.
And you and I were both like, well, we anticipated something, but there's still plenty of time.
Plenty of time.
Yeah.
All right, so we are live at Fire Bar and Grill in Crystal Lake. We'll have Sox tickets to give away here. It's all brought to you by Miller Lite. It is Miller time. It is a Friday. Come on by to Fire Bar and Grill in Crystal Lake if you're in the area. We've got Waddle's World coming up next. Jason Goff at 4. Len Casper at 5. We got to talk about a Rick Hahn's interview, too, that he did with Captain J. Hood. I thought there was some good stuff. And just the frustration of watching that White Sox team is something that we've got to get after a little bit later in the show. Come on out. You've made it to your weekend. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
It's that time again when we venture deep into the great unknown.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run. He's not fast, but he gets open.
A trip inside the mind of a multi-concussed former Bears wide receiver.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him. And he had an all-time day in the use of smelling salt.
Buckle up, boys and girls.
Tom Waddle, everything wants to have a Tom Waddle. If I had a football team, I'd like to have a Tom Waddle on my team because you draw from that.
It's time to go inside Waddle's World.
Tom Waddle did have to use a lot of smelling salt.
Oh, yes. Waddle's World brought to you by our fine friends and partners at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit wintrust.com/find us. Member FDIC.
By the way, the guy who called me a meatball, one of my guys on Twitter.
Who was that?
My guy Jim.
Yeah.
Jim's his alias. I believe his real name's Dwayne. He says,
Whoa.
I don't know.
Real name's Dwayne, how do you come up with Jim?
And why name is.
Yeah.
But there are certain guys who I've just accepted. There are many guys in this Twitch chat.
Yeah.
Who I know and I love now. And we accept everyone. Cleveland David's in there, for goodness sake.
Really?
He's my big adversary. I haven't even
looked. Are you getting along with him?
I haven't seen if he said anything. I just looked in there. He says he hasn't.
I don't have Twitch up on my computer back at the station.
Probably
so. I wouldn't even know what kind of nonsense is going on.
You'd be too distracted.
Yeah.
But Jim's the one who called me the meatball. And he said he actually got it from you 10 years ago, and you don't even remember.
I don't remember
that. You once called me meatball.
Did I?
That is so Waddle right there.
I have no idea. Game five of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. Colorado can wrap it up. You remember who I had selected as this year's champ, don't you?
Yeah, the Blackhawks.
No, the Avs. And they are a game away from making that happen. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know who the hell most of the guys are. I've enjoyed myself watching the Stanley Cup Final.
I don't want
it. It's been really fast.
I think it's going to end, but I don't want it to end. And I, you know, I love overtime hockey. I have a question.
Six-on-six overtime hockey, as you like to call it?
I have a question later in the show, because obviously that goal that they ended the game with reminded you not on the way they scored, but just that no one knew it was a goal right away.
I thought that one was more visible than the Patrick Kane goal.
Right, I mean, especially on television, you could see the puck go right into the goal. But, like, there was that pause where at first you're like, they're celebrating, like, in 2010 when Patrick Kane scored. So it reminded a lot of us of the Patrick Kane score. And it got me thinking of how the Patrick Kane game figures into the Chicago sports landscape. I think this will be a better question in your world as opposed to talking about the Samberg game. This is the exact opposite of the Samberg game conversation. Okay?
That's a tease. Are you going to unload that on us later?
Later. I'm going to unload it on you.
Really? Well, why can't we just talk about it now?
Well, this is your world, not mine.
I'd rather talk about that. I want to know what you're thinking. I want to know what you got on your brain.
We always joke that the Samberg game, it's just a regular season game that you got to do.
Well, that's me. Yeah, that's the stance that I have. I admire Rhino. He's a Hall of Famer. I have no problem with Rhino. My problem's with you.
So I was after that goal, I was thinking about the way the Hawks won their first one since 1961 in 2010 on the walk-off goal.
Right?
Philly, game six.
Yeah.
The weird angle. No one knows where the puck is.
Yeah.
Only Kaner, he's shaking his jazz hands. And like people are like, whoa, what's going on? And then no one knows what has ever happened to the puck either.
Right.
Like, is there a more amazing way to win a championship than that? A walk-off? And then you think Michael Jordan, 1998, the last shot of his Bulls career, for goodness sake. The sixth championship ended with him in that last 2 minutes with the steal, the shot, the pose. And then you think about that game seven of Cubs and Indians. It was maybe the best postseason game ever played. Walk-off Kaner goal, Michael Jordan's last shot in a Bulls uniform, maybe the best baseball postseason game ever played. And in 05, by the way, it wasn't a championship clincher. That win where Konerko hit a grand slam and you have the Scotty Pods walk-off surprise. That was pretty damn good, too. So what is the best finish in Chicago sports history?
Wouldn't it be Kaner because that particular play did result in a championship? I mean, isn't that your answer?
It's Michael Jordan. It's his last shot as a Bull, pushing off, standing there
is
with
this
the
against Russell?
Yeah, Brian Russell. I mean, think about those three, and think about the craziness
but
of the
you're,
whole.
The Blackhawks hadn't won since when?
Has there ever been a list to come out as, do we have a unanimous, or when we say, like, you laugh at the Samberg game. Because it's a regular season game,
correct.
And you were joking.
Yes.
Make them about postseason games.
They're like the Johnny Bench game.
What is the best postseason moment in Chicago sports history?
Well, again, I would say because, like you mentioned, the Michaels shot, that was their sixth title, right? Been there, done that. Don't mean that it's not important, but been there, done that.
But it could have been, like, the best final 2 minutes from a star. Like, he made a layup, he stole the ball, and then he hit the game-winning shot. The Cubs game ended in a 108-year drought in one of the most dramatic finishes ever. And then Kaner ended a long drought since 1961, and it's a walk-off.
Right.
It's score and you win.
I thought the most drama-filled moment of that whole Game 7 was when Rajay Davis hit the home run. Like, that was not even a Cub, you know, act.
Sure. Like that could be I would say that the Cubs Indian, would you guys agree with me that the Cubs Indians game is probably the most memorable postseason game in Chicago history?
Because that went everywhere. It looked like the Cubs had it comfortably, and then all of a sudden the comeback happened.
Well, and just
your closer that you traded for, and it felt like everything.
The rain delay, the speech.
Yep. Well, for me, too, being there, like, takes it to another level. I wasn't at the other games.
And remember, the Cubs had a two-run lead then in the 10th, and then the Indians scored
again. They scored once, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, no, is Montgomery going to blow it? So, like, what is known? Is that a good poll? Has anyone written an article about this?
I don't think so.
What is the best finish in Chicago sports history?
I think I would go back to the Kane goal because of what, you know, it had been so long since that team had been to the top of the mountain. I get what you're saying about Jordan, and I don't mean to minimize it, but been there, done that. And again, I think the most dramatic part of the entire Game 7 for me was the Rajay Davis home run. So I think that the Kaner goal was probably where I would, and being a hockey guy, of course, was probably where my vote would go. What would you say? Answer your own question.
It was tough because that finish between Tampa and Colorado reminded me of the Kaner goal. And then we had just had, like, next day was Sandberg game, and I know how you tease me. And I'm like, well, and I started to think. I go, boy.
Have you come around on that yet?
That Kaner goal is so good and so dramatic, and it ended this long drought. And then I started thinking, is that the best finish ever? And I'm like, wait a minute. Michael in 98? Oh, wait a minute. The Cubs in 16.
Yeah, I would go with the Cubs. Just because of the historical context of it all. And
but I know what Waddle's saying. The finish, it was Bryant. The finish is actually Bryant.
Yes, slow hit ground ball to Bryant.
Couldn't you say the finish as well as this team was down 3-1 in the series, and that was an improbable feat in and of itself?
Yeah, you're looking at that from a wider lens.
You're zooming out a little bit, yeah.
But if I'm also going into Jordan's shot, they had to make defensive stop after that. It wasn't like Kaner ended that shot.
He called game.
And no one else knew it. Well, he called game, no one else knew it.
So where's your vote?
I'm still going with Michael.
Really?
You know I'm a Michael. I mean, Michael, he's the greatest athlete of all time. And that was his exclamation mark on his Bulls career. To end his Bulls career with that shot and that pose.
Has he hired a coach yet?
I'm not sure.
Not yet?
No. The Hawks
so they're drafted without a coach yesterday.
You want me to poll that question?
Yeah, poll that question.
So I'm going to term it best finish in Chicago sports history. And Sox fans are going to get mad at me.
Why?
Well, because, but again, like these were all in deciding championship last games. They won it decisively.
Right.
4-0. I think the last game was 1-0.
Here's another one. How about the two goals in 17 seconds?
Damn.
I was
The Hawks probably. I mean,
that was Boston, right?
Boston series.
I was in the Denver airport for that, coming home from a soccer event.
That may even one up the Kaner goal.
By the way, speaking of the Blackhawks, as we told you earlier, because we are your home for hockey conversations, they are expected to hire Canadiens assistant Luke Richardson as their next head coach, taking over for interim coach Derek King. So you can give me a breakdown of Richardson if you'd want to. If you don't want to, that's okay as well.
Rocket Richardson.
I don't believe that
is that his nickname, Rocket Richardson?
No, I don't think so. Some serious news about a Bears player. Bears linebacker Matt Adams was charged with misdemeanor firearm possession. Arrested last night, charged with issue. Cited for having a high-capacity magazine and metal piercing bullets, according to the Chicago police. I believe the Bears have said, look, we're not going to make any comments at this particular time. We're in the process of gathering more information. So we'll see what happens. Adams is in his first season with the Bears after spending the past four with Indianapolis, where he did play for Coach Eberflus as well. When do the Bears go to training camp? Like I said this earlier. I mean, like, they're done, right? They're done until the camp kicks off.
It's like a month
off. I believe it's July 26th, I want to say it is. So a month and 2 days.
Nice. Did you see this as well? I got a lot of good stories here. So I got a lot of nonsense, including the largest snake that's ever been captured in Florida. But the word the has been trademarked. The Ohio State has been awarded the trademark for the word the.
What? Did you notice that last night at the draft? It felt like, I can't remember. If
and by
it was...
the way, Meller said that they were going to, each pick was going to be introduced with the State Farm jingle.
It did. If you heard it, if you listened in the background, you could hear it.
I did not hear it.
Yeah, you could hear it a couple times. But did you notice when Adam Silver and Mark Tatum were announcing the picks? So Ohio State had one guy in the first round, one guy in the second round. There was a little extra emphasis on the.
The. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office approved Ohio State's application earlier this week by issuing a registration certificate. It allows Ohio State to control the use of the on clothing, namely T-shirts, baseball hats, and all the foregoing being promoted, distributed, and sold through channels customary to the field of sports and collegiate athletics. In other words, only Ohio State can have apparel that just has the on it. So they have been able to trademark
that's
the word
something.
The. That's weird.
They've been trying to do that for a while, though, I believe. I think this has been something that's been going on for like 5 or so years now, and it's finally coming across the finish line.
It is.
Isn't that like when Pat Riley trademarked three-peat? Like, isn't all three-peat gear?
I think so.
Was it?
He did that when he was
Lakers
running.
Coach.
I thought, did he do it with the Lakers?
Yeah.
Or when he was done there? Okay, maybe he did it while he was there. But yeah, I think he probably made a poo ton of money with that.
And then LeBron, I think, was trying to trademark Taco Tuesday, too.
Come on.
Shot down.
I think it got shot down, yeah.
I think somebody probably beat him to the punch on that one. Have you seen this flamingo test as well?
No.
Reveals your likelihood of you dying within 7 years.
Standing on one leg, is
yeah,
this?
Yeah, middle-aged people who cannot balance on one leg for 10 seconds are at a dramatically increased risk of dying within 7 years. Researchers asked 1,700 Brazilians between the ages of 51 and 75 to undergo the brief physical test and subsequently tracked their health over the following years. I can read this and stand on one leg, probably.
Let's hope.
The study published in the
British
Journal
higher.
Of Sports Medicine
higher.
On Wednesday asserts
higher.
That the simple test
higher.
Should be included during a person's annual physical as it
up.
Provides useful information. I could also argue with you that, like, my ankles are shot.
Right. You played football.
Well, I'm just saying they're shot.
That goes into the equation, though.
We know.
Did you both play? Yeah, you both did. Really? So we'll reevaluate
and
in 7 years.
And that was on the left one. Are you better on your right foot?
Are you right dominant?
I'm wobbling a little bit right now. I'm not going to argue.
It's because you're drunk.
I'm not drunk.
All right, you're good.
Oh, I'm solid right now.
Yeah, you got 7 years in you.
Yeah.
We'll check back in seven more.
Yeah, I'll be 50. No, I'll be 62 at that time. Anyway, so that's what they did. Of the 1,700 participants, 20% were unable to complete the test. Unsurprisingly.
17%. Should we do it?
20%.
Should we do everybody at the bar at the lunch? Come on, everyone stand up. Let's see what you got.
As part of the so-called flamingo test, each participant was asked to stand barefoot on one leg while keeping the other leg raised in the air as though mimicking one of the hot pink birds. They were also required to keep their head upright and their arms straight at their side for the 10-second duration.
All right, everybody in the bar stand up. Come on, I'm going to tweet this out. We're going to do this. We're going to do all this test. Everybody on one foot right
wow,
now.
You do have
one,
the most,
Kenny. One, two, three.
4, 5, 6. I feel like Mike Francesa. 6, 7. Okay, did you guys make it? Oh, Danny Lynch is done. You're out. Danny Lynch is going to be gone within 7 years. Anyway, the test became harder with age. Just 5% of participants between the ages of 51 and 55 failed, with a number rising to 54% for people between the ages of 71 and 75. I don't know why in the world that would be a legitimate test for whether or not you were only going to live for 7 more years.
It's not.
It's not?
I don't think it is.
I have a story about tiny mites having sex on your face.
Huh? Tiny mites or mice?
Mites.
I was going to say that. There's a bunch of mites.
And a record-breaking
a mouse orgy.
A record-breaking Burmese python. that was discovered in Florida. I'll tell you about that when we come back as well.
It's a Waddle and Sylvie live broadcast.
Welcome to Miller Time.
We are live from Fire Bar and Grill in Crystal Lake. Listen now on 100.3 HD2,
the ESPN Chicago app,
or ESPN 1000.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox! Let's go, 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 White Sox!
You want me to do a free ticket Friday?
Free ticket Friday, baby.
Brought to you by Miller Lite every Friday at 50 past the hour all the way through the end of our show. This time it's a White Sox Tigers after the holiday on July 7th.
That's a White Sox winner.
That's a White Sox winner. Are we guaranteeing a win? Caller 7.
Yeah.
312-332-3776 for your chance to win White Sox tickets. And then we've got the Sox tickets here at Fire Bar and Grill in Crystal Lake, which is also brought to you by Miller Lite.
There's a lot brought to you by Miller Lite today.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
Indiana man finds adult toy inside a fish he caught in the Ohio River.
The fish ate the adult toy.
John Hoop was fishing over the weekend on the Ohio River near Lawrenceburg, Indiana.
That's a hooper, right? Yeah, like when you've got a hoop, you call him Hooper, don't you?
For a nickname?
Yeah.
Hooper? Hooper, throw me a line.
You get a John Hoop, it's Hooper. Hoops?
Probably call him Hoop. Maybe Pooper. Hooper Pooper. Anyway, the Hoop Master.
The Hoop Master General.
Was fishing over the weekend on the Ohio River in Indiana. Caught a 20-pound catfish. He realized its stomach was huge. He thought it was eggs.
Then he'll eat anything,
pressed
right?
on the stomach and realized it was hard in there.
That truly is a bottom feeder right there if you're eating that.
When Hoop cut open fish, he found a foam ball and an adult toy. I have no idea how or why it ended up in the river, his friend told the local Fox affiliate. When it came out, John, my wife, and I, we all started laughing. My wife immediately covered my daughter's eyes and turned her away from it. Caught a fish with an adult toy in it.
By the way, I passed a place today on the way here. I found a trout farm. A trout farm.
A what?
A trout farm.
You thought you said a trog farm.
I blacked out there for a second.
You haven't even had a sip of beer yet either.
It's a trout farm. You know, one of those.
Yeah, take the kids, go fishing.
And, like, you're guaranteed to catch fish, right?
Or you get your money back.
Yeah. It's a Lake Julian trout farm, right?
Okay.
I wrote it down.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the kids there.
Yeah.
I hope there's nothing in their stomachs.
The kids are.
The trout.
By the way, I told you about the record-breaking 18-foot Burmese python that was found in Florida.
You sent us a picture of this.
It's unbelievable. Almost 18 feet long, 215-pound female loaded with 122 eggs.
Wow.
122 eggs. The record-breaking invasive snake was deep in the scrub where a radio-equipped male, because they put these radio signals inside these male snakes and they serve as scouts. So they can find these because they attract the females.
Really?
And all of these snakes have been turned into, have been let loose in the wild. Do you think it's real fun? Hey, I'm going to buy a python. I'm going to keep it as a pet. Next thing you know, that thing is 12 foot long and you can't keep it in your house.
It's amazing.
So you take it to the Everglades and you just dump it. Seriously.
So pythons, the way they kill their prey is by strangulation, right?
That is correct.
They don't bite.
Then they swallow you whole.
Oh, then they swallow you whole.
Yeah, that's what they do. They strangle you. They get all the air out of you, and then they swallow you whole. Anyway, in recent years, they have become an issue in the Everglades, devastating the populations of native mammals, including rabbits, possums, and white-tailed deer as well.
Ooh.
This particular snake, they believe, was one of the first ones. It says here, the massive matriarch might well be the original pet snake. One of them released into the wild decades ago.
Wow.
So this has become a problem.
That's an amazing story.
I'm going to let you read this because we've got to go to break because Jason's going to join us. Tiny mites that have sex on your face, they have a problem.
They have a problem or we have a problem?
They have a problem.
No, we have.
Yeah.
If mites are having sex in our face.
They are poor cleaning mites that spend their entire life living deep in your face.
Ooh.
At night, they're 0.3 millimeters long. They leave the pores to find new skin follicles.
Ooh.
They meet a partner, and then they that get it done on your cheeks.
Are these the people who don't wash their face, or is this for everybody?
A new study, though, has found that the mites could be facing a problem as their DNA is eroding, meaning they are close to extinction.
Good.
You have mites on your face that are coming out at night and getting down.
Mighty mites having sex on your face.
Tyler gave me that article, so if you want to blame anyone.
Well done, Tyler. All right, we're live at Fire Bar and Grill in Crystal Lake. Coming up next, we get the Bulls information from Jason Goff, who does the Bulls pre- and post-game show on television. We'll talk to Jason coming up next.